This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clinett.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, David Prutton, in for Mark Clement this week, as the EFL and sport as a whole pay their respects to Her Late Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, who sadly passed away last Thursday at the age of 96. As a result of that very sad news, all EFL fixtures were suspended last weekend as a mark of respect and only resumed again on Tuesday night across the Sky Bet Championship, League One and League Two, which are all back as normal this week following the suspension of fixtures. Joining me to look ahead to what the weekend has in store is Sheffield United's Courtney Sweetman-Kirk, who I'm delighted to welcome as my special guest this week on the official EFL podcast. So it's a very warm welcome to the official EFL podcast to Sheffield United women's striker Courtney Sweetman-Kirk. Courtney, good day to you. How are you doing?
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you, Prots.
Pleasure to have you on. It's something that we love doing, the official EFL podcast, and we get people on that know absolutely everything about everything EFL. So I think we're in good hands today. Glad to have you aboard. We're going to start with the Championship. Let's just take a look at what's coming this weekend. Obviously, this is getting recorded on Wednesday. There's fixtures tonight. We had fixtures last night in the Championship on Tuesday, back after, of course, a quiet weekend. But this weekend, the Sky Bet Championship, it's a full programme of fixtures on Saturday with the lunchtime game seeing Russell Martin's Swansea City entertain Hull City at the Liberty Stadium. That's a 12:30 kickoff. Elsewhere, it's a Midlands derby for Coventry, who face Birmingham City at St Andrews. Burnley host Bristol City. Huddersfield take on Cardiff. Luton against Blackburn, and Blackpool will be bringing a touch of the seaside to South London as they visit Millwall at the new Dome. West Brom travel to Norwich. Preston entertain Heckey's high-flying Sheffield United. It's QPR against Stoke. Watford welcome Sunderland to Vicarage Road. Paul Ince and his Reading side travel to Wigan. And in the Saturday night 7:45 kickoff, it's Borough against Rotherham. Right, we're going to take a look forward to those fixtures, Courtney. Also, with a reference to what we've seen in midweek, specifically the Tuesday games, a good win for Blackburn, of course, against Watford. Stoke City, Alex Neil with his first win as Stoke manager. Yes, lots of conjecture moving from Sunderland to Stoke. We're going to get onto that in just a second. But how important is it when a new manager comes in to get that first maximum points under the belt?
Yeah, I think it's huge. It's like, you know, whether it's a new player, a new manager, they want to start their tenure very well. And I think, you know, I think especially for Alex Neil, sort of the way that it happened, the fact that he left Sunderland, I think, you know, some people thought it was a bit of a risk, were sort of baffled by the decision. So the fact that he's got onto a good start really quickly, I think more than anything, it's important for him personally and his confidence and sort of vindicating himself as to say, right, this is why I made my decision. I'm going to go and start really well. And it's something that he did. And I think Stoke played really well.
The fact that he's moved to Stoke off the back of doing such a good job at Sunderland, can you understand the reasons why? Obviously, four seasons in League One with Sunderland, finally got them up through the playoffs, a wonderful day at Wembley that we were there to see. From the outside looking in, what are the benefits of moving from a Sunderland to a Stoke City?
You know, in terms of Stoke, they've been a stalwart, really, of the Championship. So I suppose there's a bit of relative safety there, if you can say that in football terms, and especially the Championship. But I think looking, you know, if we're looking back in terms of the things that have been said around the press, around the media, in terms of that sort of one-year rolling contract, not having that much safety with Sunderland. So, you know, in terms of what Stoke have offered Alex Neil, it'll be relative, as I say, safety in that sense and an opportunity to get promoted. Because I think, you know, behind the background, Sunderland, in terms of where they are, the infrastructure, the stadium, the training ground, yes, they've got the infrastructure to go up. But, you know, to come into the Championship and then get automatically promoted again or through the playoffs in the next season, it's going to be so difficult. So maybe Alex Neil feels that he's got more of a chance of promotion with Stoke.
So he thinks he's got a chance of promotion with Stoke there. A team, of course, that would have been in the early season or pre-season favourites to go up, Middlesbrough. They face Rotherham on Saturday night at the Riverside. Not great viewing at the Riverside on Tuesday, given the fact that they were 3-0 down at half-time against Cardiff. It's safe to say Chris Wilder's side hasn't had the start that he would have wished or the fans would have wished for. Can you put your finger on, Courtney, why this seems to be the case? Because there's a manager there, of course, who knows how to get promoted out of the Championship. What's the early season teething problems down to?
Yeah, it's about knowing the championship for Chris Wilder. And for me, they're just conceding too many goals. A Chris Wilder side, you normally expect, they don't concede many. I think sort of over his time in the championship and in the Premier League, he's averaged a goal. And that's a goal conceding. And that's a lot higher at the moment. And it was very telling, actually, in his interview after he said about a nervousness and an edginess within the team. And I think, you know, you can see that setting in terms of conceding a goal, and then it's the second one, then it's the third one. If you look at the goals, they were very much individual mistakes, and you see that throughout the team. And I think when that happens and you're on that sort of run, it, you know, confidence works both ways. When you're flying high and you feel unbeatable and everything that you're going to hit is going to go in the back of net. And conversely, I think Middlesbrough now are in a stage where every time they concede, they're thinking, right, is it going to be a second goal, a third goal conceded? And the edginess and the nervousness, I think, and what Chris Wilder's saying is very telling. And sometimes that's not something maybe a manager control in terms of individual players, but they need to find a way to get through games, to stop conceding so many goals, stop the rot, as it were, and then can build forward from that.
He does sound quite combative in his post-match thoughts, doesn't he? Talking about systems and perceptions of systems and changing either a three at the back or a four at the back. He did make substitutions at half-time, got a reaction in the second half, of course, with two goals, not enough to get anything from the game. Given what we saw with Chris at Sheffield United, and given how it's gone so far with Borough, and you talk about maybe him voicing his opinion a bit more with regards to what's going on the pitch post-match, do you take the pressure that's on that football club to get back to the Premier League, given who we've seen go past them in the Championship and back into the Prem?
Yeah, I think it's massive. And look, no club deserves to be in the Premier League on a name. Obviously, you've got to make your way there. It's on merit, as the English football system works. But I think people do see Middlesbrough as a big club, a club that should be in the Premier League. So, yeah, I think in terms of that systems, I think it's always a funny thing to speak about, because, yes, you can talk about three at the back, four at the back, how your midfield set up. You know, we talk about diamonds and all the rest of it, but at the end of the day, it's an 11v11, and I think he's probably voicing his sort of opinion on maybe, you know, some of how some of the players are reacting to that, switching between systems within the game, and maybe the players are unhappy with that. I don't know, only Chris will tell you that behind the scenes. But I think there's got to be a responsibility with the players on the pitch, and I sort of think that that's what he's getting at in terms of talking about systems.
It's that grey area that gives us all this ability to debate, doesn't it? Where there's a manager that wants to have a system. And I think we can get bogged down in systems and formations because they're fundamentally something to play from, aren't they? After going to what you're saying, he's not happy with individual mistakes in games, which as a manager, you can't really legislate for, can you? With regards to, I want my team to do this, but if a defender's going to defend a certain way, or a back four or a back three are going to defend a certain way, then it doesn't matter which way you line up in a football match if you're giving away cheap goals, which seems to be, as you're saying, Courtney, the thing coming from Chris. However, if you look, we talked about confidence, we talked about expectation. With regards to Sheffield United, a club that you know very, very well, of course, the reaction this season seems to have been borne out from Paul Heckenbottom's comments about what he felt off the back of the playoff semi-final defeat on penalties to Forest. Yes, manager of the month. Yes, a wonderful run of fixtures and results after that opening weekend disappointment. Can you see where all this groundwork's gone in, Courtney? Can you see that improvement? Can you see this work in progress? And what have you made of the opening few games under Sheffield United going for the promotion to the Premier League?
I mean, if we're going way back, I mean, from when he came in November, taking over from Jokanovic, who, again, sort of tried to come away from the Sheffield United way.
Hecky's didn't fit that, did it? Felt an odd marriage, that those two.
No, it was odd, I think. You know, in terms of just, we talk about culture, don't we, within clubs. I don't think it matched in that sense then in terms of, you know, the formations. Again, we can go back and forth with that. But I just think the whole fit, changing the style of play, the formations didn't work. I think Hecky came back in for a start. He gave the lads confidence, which is always a big thing within football. Took them back to something they know has built so well on it. And as you say, then didn't rest on his laurels in terms of they went so close, and we know, you know, how difficult it can be in terms of in that playoff situation, not making it. And then you see so many teams then falter. But it's gone the other way for the Blades. Yes, in terms of Watford, I watched that game and I thought, was it almost a men against boys? I think with Watford, they look like the Premier League side. They look faster, fitter, stronger. But in all fairness, in terms of, you know, the pre-season that the Blades had, it wasn't great in terms of injuries. They struggled in that sense. And you're seeing it now in terms of, you know, they're still waiting for Billy Sharp to come back, which is a massive loss. And you talk about that goal, Chris Basham coming back, and it comes from a tackle he makes inside the box. Then they break. Rhian Brewster did very, very well. As you say, Reda Kadra, a player that I loved to watch last season on loan. So I think he's done very well there in terms of it's been a bit of a slow start from at Blades. He's had to make substitute appearances, but now he's, you know, his dynamic is powerful, and I think he adds something to the Blades in that sense. McBurney, then it's like a bus, isn't it? You don't score for, what is it, 40 odd games and three in a row. So, you know, for him, I was at that game at Luton and you just saw the relief and the celebration. It was brilliant. So I think then you're adding Billy Sharp back into that mix. Hopefully we can get Rhian Brewster firing as well. I think it's, you know, that they've been fantastic. And now Ahmed Hodzic has been absolutely brilliant. I did a lot of Nations League in the summer and I was very impressed with him for Bosnia. So to see him hitting the ground running and then keeping hold of Sander Berger as well, I think that's massive for Blades. There were so many sort of rumours that he was going to go. I don't know what will go on around Christmas, whether that will start rumbling on and in the January transfer window that he'll go potentially. But if they can hold on to him, which they have, you know, and I just think they're exciting to watch. They, and in terms of, we talk about Chris Wilder and what he implemented at Sheffield United and being hard to break down and then going forward on the break and being able to nick goals. I think we saw that perfectly last night. And if they keep doing that throughout the season, then, you know, hopefully they'll get that automatic promotion or maybe through the playoffs.
So Redder's got his first goal for Sheffield United. Ollie McBurney's back in the goals. When you are a more forward-thinking player that's had a barren spell, how much is the work that you do upstairs and how much is the work that you actually do on the football training pitch?
It's absolutely massive. I think you can do anything on the training pitch day in, day out, and, you know, it'll fall for you. You'll be hitting things, top bins, but you come to that game as there's that sort of thing in your head. I'm sure you did, mate. But no, in terms of then getting on the pitch, it's always a different feeling when you cross that white line. And I think you saw that with Ollie as well. It, you know, it wasn't just a fact of playing and not scoring. It was the injuries as well. So I always think that has a psychological impact. And you almost do too much. You're trying to hit the lever off the ball. You know, sometimes when it comes to and you just need to stroke it into the net, you're trying to do too much, trying to be too precise. And then I think it's unbelievable, isn't it, the psychology within football, because you see he scores that goal. It was difficult as well, that volley at Luton. And then, yeah, everything just becomes more easy. So, yeah, having that work with the, you know, the sports psychologist and keeping that calmness is so important and I think is half the battle.
Burnley's another team, of course, that's going to be in the equation, you feel, come the end of the season. Lots been made about how Vincent Kompany's come in, what has changed. And I always say this when we're talking about Burnley, you can't come away from what a wonderful job Sean Dyche did keeping Burnley in the Premier League when they bounced out, getting them back into it, making them a solid, hard-to-beat, top-level side, but doing it in a different way, of course. We've talked about formations and lineups and kind of personnel, but a culture, a perception, a style, is the word that I'm scrambling for. It's there in the stats, it's there in their possession, it's there in the number of passes. Have you seen it with a naked eye, Courtney? Have you seen them firsthand? Can you see this change in it? I mean, they are 6 unbeaten now in the Championship.
Yeah, what I would say is that they're more adaptable for me. They're definitely more aggressive, especially going forward in the forward press, but they choose their moments. And yes, they're more likely to play through the thirds at times, but they will still go back to front. They will still be direct. And I think, you know, that's always great because it keeps teams guessing. Look, you know, the Man Cities of the world, when they pass, and we know it's so difficult to deal with. But as well, in terms of doing that, pushing, you know, defenders back and then being able to play the long pass in and almost drawing certain teams in. And I think that's what Burnley do really well. I like what Vincent Kompany keeps saying. He said when he came in and keeps going with the terms of Burnley and what they stand for and being difficult to beat and the culture of the club, and not just, you know, in terms of the club, what it means in Burnley as a whole. And I like that because he's really embedded himself into that. And the fans that the feelings have with the club. And I think it is a perception. I think that's the big thing, because you always think Burnley, hard to beat, route one, 4-4-2, you know, crosses in the box. But I think he is changing that perception slowly but surely, but also not going too far, because seeing managers come in and completely want to put their, you know, style of play on it. And I get that. And, you know, far be it from me to go against that. But I think I like the way that Vincent has done it in terms of, yes, he's bringing his own perception, his own style into it, but he's still keeping, you know, the things that make Burnley, Burnley, let's say.
And I suppose the big thing as well, when you see any player such as that, and that is the real yardstick at which you measure them, great players. I mean, properly awe-inspiring players that you see, we've watched on TV and across the Premier League. It's about getting that point across. And he strikes me as a man and a manager that when you listen to him talk, there is a humility there that perhaps belies how successful he was as a player. So that must be very important if you're stood in front of a group of players and you're telling them what to do, but understanding that possibly, with the greatest respect, if you're looking at a Championship player, it possibly not as good as Vincent Kompany, or what we have a career as good as Vincent Kompany did, but you can still get those points across, can't you, in that humble kind of engaging way.
Yeah, and I think that's probably, again, testament to him and how good he is as a coach, because I think that's when sometimes we see with the managers that have been top players, they probably struggle to get their point across, in the sense that, because, you know, it was easy for them at times to be able to do certain things, so they potentially don't understand at times why players can't play in a certain way or do certain things, whereas for me, Vincent always comes across, as you say, with so much humility. And it's that communication thing for me, working under different managers in terms of, look, within a dressing room, you've got the 11 on the pitch, you've got obviously 20 plus players below that. So being able to get your point across in different ways to different people, it's so important. And I think he must have such a high emotional intelligence, for me, is what comes across. And, you know, sort of the dealings I've had with him briefly as well, he just comes across as a nice person. And I think that goes a long way. I think sometimes we forget that, don't we, in life. We want to be the best at everything. And sometimes the sort of the morality of people takes a backseat to where you want to go. But yeah, coming across as just being a nice person. Obviously, he'll have that side of him where if the players don't do it as he pleases, he will have that side. Don't get
Plus,
me wrong.
Plus, he's got Craig Bellamy next to him. But I think there is definite good cop, bad cop dynamic
that,
there.
That's there's the give and the take with that. So even if he doesn't fancy it, he probably lets Craig off and just go at them for me. But no, I think he's done a great job so far, and I'm very interested to see how they progress.
Big game for Coventry, of course, given the fact that Birmingham are in the bottom three alongside them. They're 22nd. Coventry find themselves 24th and Huddersfield in between them in 23rd, with the breaking news that Danny Schofield has parted company with the Terriers just in the last few minutes. We've heard word from them. I mean, a team, Courtney, let's quickly wrap that one up, that was in the playoff final against Nottingham Forest, that had possibly at least one, possibly two shouts for a penalty in a game of that magnitude. The sliding doors element of where they find themselves now. They were literally one game away from the Premier League. They're now second bottom of the Championship. Danny hired in the interim from inside Huddersfield to take over from Carlos Corberan, who moved on in the summer. It really does re-emphasise just how close, but how oh so far, that shot at glory is, isn't it? Given the start to the season, given how close they were to a return to the Premier League. What's your initial reaction to that? Is it just the brutal nature of what the Championship can be?
Yeah, it's so brutal. And we spoke about it earlier with Blades, how close they came and what a great season they've had. And it's completely the other end for Huddersfield. I think the timing that Carlos left was difficult for the club to handle. They've also losing key players in O'Brien and Toffolo and Sonani. He was on loan as well there, wasn't he? And he went back and they got another move. So in terms of that, I think it was very difficult for Danny Schofield. For me as well, I think he's sort of been let down with his players at times, because I'm looking at your bigger players within that squad, like you saw Thomas's to now step up. And I don't feel like within that squad that's happened. And I know there's been a very quick change and turnover. But I think Danny Schofield is unlucky in the sense that at the time that he took it over, it was just a very big mountain to climb.
Tough one then, of course. And we wish Danny all the best wherever he ends up next. And of course, whoever comes in has got to make sure that they pull away from the bottom end of the Championship. Given we're talking about the bottom end of the Championship, we're going to lean now back into League One. So let me run you through your fixtures in Sky Bet League One this weekend. Cheltenham travel to Accrington Stanley. Bolton are at home to Peterborough. Bristol Rovers host Lincoln City. And Barnsley travel to Cambridge. Elsewhere, it's Derby against Wickham. Exeter against Burton. And Charlton travel north to Fleetwood. Forest Green entertain Morecambe. MK Dons are at Oxford. And Shrewsbury Town make the short journey to Port Vale. The so-called Dockyard Derby I think that's the Sky Sports own naming of that. Sees Portsmouth welcome Plymouth Argyle to Fratton Park, and a big game between Ipswich and Sheffield Wednesday at Hillsborough. Right, it seems to me, Courtney, that we've got a lot of big names in League One that are all working under different expectations. All, of course, want to get out of that particular division, but two so far seem to be making a pretty good job of it. Top is Ipswich, second are Portsmouth. And, I mean, it couldn't be any closer. There's just one goal in it in the goal difference. Played the same number of games, won the same number of games, drawn the same number of games. Funnily enough, lost the same number of games, which is 0 points, 20. Kieran McKenna linked with the Brighton job, seemingly since Graham Potter moved on to Chelsea. The Cowleys, of course, in charge down at Fratton Park. Is it safe to say you've got two teams there, perhaps attacking League One in slightly different ways, given the management in charge of both?
Yeah, I would say that they're slightly different in terms of McKenna. I like the work he's done. He plays very high intensity. They're quite flexible, but in terms of the stats they show, it's more short. It's more trying to go through rather than over. Again, they can be adaptable. They can mix it up. Whereas I think Portsmouth, that again, they will attack centrally, but they're probably more clinical. Whereas Ipswich take more shots, and it's almost one of those where, you know, if you don't take the shot, you win the raffle. So they pay on percentages. I think Portsmouth are a lot more clinical with what they do, and they go a lot more down the left as well. Lots of shots, and yeah, to try and hit the back of the net. So I think they're quite similar in terms of their intensities, but just a slightly different way in terms of how they attack. But I think it's amazing, isn't it, in terms of these big clubs we're seeing in League One now all vying to get out. And again, like I said earlier, in terms of no one necessarily deserves to go up the leagues in terms of their name and the statures of their clubs historically. But I think it's shaping up for a great League One season, isn't it?
I think as well, given we've seen Danny Cowley, again, a manager of the month just recently for the work he's done with Portsmouth. And as I mentioned just a couple of minutes ago, the fact that Kieran's been mentioned in dispatches with regards to the vacant job at Brighton shows the good job that he's doing. Stephen Schumacher, of course, took the reins at Plymouth when Ryan Lowe moved on to Preston. Darren Moore doing very good jobs, of course, with Sheffield Wednesday. And then you've got Bolton and Cambridge behind them. Key parts of this, Courtney, must be the fan base and what role they play. From my own experience of playing at what you would call a so-called bigger club in that division, I mean, as long as you're not down there for too long, because the novelty does wear off, I think, after about a season or two, where these clubs are travelling to places that perhaps are not too familiar with. Would you look or lean towards, I don't know, Ipswich at Portman Road, Pompey at Fratton Park, of course, Plymouth at Home Park, Sheffield Wednesday at Hillsborough, harnessing those types of fan bases? Because even though they are what you would call away from their so-called glory years, they do still pack a punch, don't they, when it comes to that fan base that turns up week in, week out?
Yeah, I think the fan base is so, so important. I think it works two ways in terms of the away support that they get carrying them through. Obviously, it's the same at home in terms of packing out those stadiums. And also, it brings a bit of nervousness to the other side when you go into these bigger stadiums and they're absolutely packed out. And you know, not all of these players playing will be used to that and playing in front of those sort of crowds, especially when they get hostile. So I think it's definitely something to harness. And again, going back in terms of the overall structure of the club and what they're used to dealing with and have the ability to deal with in terms of the off the field side of it, and maybe better placed in terms of their infrastructure to deal with this week in, week out, and then going up to the championship. I do think, obviously, those so-called bigger clubs do have the advantage in that sense.
One of the bigger names, of course, down there is Derby County. They lost to Lincoln in the week. They've got Wickham coming up at the weekend. Liam Rossini in charge there. Another team that's had a lot of kind of turnover, a lot of blooding of the youngsters last season, but whether that was by design or by virtue of the fact that of the financial position they found themselves in. Currently sitting 13th. I've talked about those clubs that have got used to League One in a certain way and dealing with that expectation. And we're looking at a Derby County side finding its feet at a level that, I mean, it's not played out for decades. Is that where we find the Rams?
Yeah, without a doubt. I think you can't discount the differences in the style of play throughout the leagues. And it will be a shock to some of the players, of course. I think I I've covered a couple of their games so far, and I think the aggressiveness they've struggled to deal with. I think them themselves going forward, they haven't been aggressive enough for me. You can tell they've got very good technical players on the ball. So in terms of they keep the ball, but for a lot of time without a purpose. So in the defensive third and the midfield third, and for me, what they've struggled with is when they get into the final third, it's changing that tempo and moving the ball quick enough. And when the defenders, without putting a cliche on it, the defenders will come through you. It's as simple as that. And they've not moved
Do you
the
mean
ball
in a
quick enough
physical
in the
way?
final
That,
third.
that's
Yeah,
where they
in a
step
physical
up
way.
for.
Yeah. I think that the physicality in terms of getting into the final third, they will have to move the ball quicker because defenders, they're not bothered. They will come through the back of you. It will be more physical. And yes, sometimes it is a cliche, but it does happen. And I think that's where Derby are struggling as well. I think at times at the start of the season, maybe as well, teams, because of that, them coming down, they might have given the benefit of the doubt and stepped off them a little bit. And now I think the further the games go, people are being aggressive and they're pressing them because they know that's a way to get to Derby. So, yeah, in the final third for me, got to move the ball quicker and got to get shots off quicker because I think at times they're almost trying to walk the ball into the back of the net.
Is and again is when you talk about adapting to the level and coming from your position as a forward, that if it, does it depend on the player that they either embrace that physical contact and they think, well, it's a different set of circumstances we're operating in now, or is it one where if they're not quite of the right mindset, they're going to shy away from what potentially could be the only way to get out of League One. Yes, you need to play football a certain way, but you need to bring the physical element of your game to the fore every single week, don't you?
Yeah, you have to. And I think, again, in terms of the Championship, whether it be, Premier League, throughout the refereeing of that, we've been told about the thresholds getting higher anyway. I think as you probably fall down the leagues, the thresholds then get higher on top of that. So it's getting used to that. And sometimes when you're thinking, as a forward, you're backing in. If you feel a push, if you feel a bit of a nick on the back of the heels, you're going down. And then you realise that you're not getting free kicks for that. Then you've sort of got to change your style of play as well. And for sure, it's about the players that want to go toe to toe, want to embrace. And you've got to be clever as well because, if you're a smaller forward, you're not going to go up against a 6'3" centre half and out muscle them. You know that. So yes, you've got to be intelligent in your play, but you also can't shirk those physical battles.
It's something that is really key, isn't it, to the levels of football that we talk about. You talk about those thresholds changing, and just to pump the brakes on, just specifically talking about League One at this moment. Have you seen, because you do cover a lot of football in your media or various media roles, Courtney, have you seen a bit more fluency to the football that we've seen so far this season? And if so, is it something that you actively enjoy and embrace?
Yeah, nobody wants the referees to be stopping the games every 5 minutes or even more so than that. So I think it's been great. I do think there's two sides to it as well. There's more of a fluency because of the refereeing, and also it's inevitable that I've said about the physicality of League One, and it's the same with League Two and the Championship, but also there is more football trying to be played. I do think there's now that change in the style of play. We're seeing teams play out from the back more, sometimes to their own detriment. But we are seeing that. I think we're seeing a more football-based game and a passing game and a possession-based game throughout the pyramid. So yeah, I think that coupled with the refereeing, I do think we're seeing of what fans want to see in terms of football being played and not being stopped, and that person in the middle not stopping the game and making it all about them.
With regards to Portsmouth as well, as I said, involved in a Dockyard derby, they're taking on Plymouth Argyle at Fratton Park, and just the 170 miles between them. So I think it's a derby in perception, shall we say, rather than the physical geographical proximity between the two. Moving on now to League Two. Here are your fixtures, of course, for this Sky Bet League Two weekend. Steve Evans, Stevenage, they're the visitors for Mark Hughes, Bradford City. It's a long day on the road for Wimbledon and their supporters who travel to Carlisle. We've got Colchester against Grimsby, Crewe against Crawley, and Donny play host to Swindon. Mansfield Town are at Gillingham. Leighton Orient welcome Mike Flynn's Walsall to Brisbane Road, and Flynn's old club Newport County entertain Barrow. You've also got Northampton against Rochdale, Salford host Tranmere, and Stockport welcome Harrogate Town to Esley Park. And finally, another long journey for the away fans as Hartlepool visits Sutton United. Now, a team that really jumps out of League Two by virtue of where they are in Leeds, of course, right at the top, Leyton Orient under Richie Wellens. Safe to say he was parachuted in last season on a salvage job to make sure that their season didn't end in relegation. He's done exactly that. They've started like a train in this new season. He's got experience, of course, took Swindon up from League Two to League One, moved on to Salford City and Doncaster. Tough times at those two clubs, Courtney. Are we now seeing a manager who has been around for a fairly long time on his managerial journey, but learning from not just the good stuff, i.e. promotion with Swindon, but the tougher side of what football management's about with regards to Salford City and Doncaster?
Yeah, as you say, Richie's got lots of experience, but actually in relative terms in management, he's still quite young, isn't he? So I think for me personally, you always learn more from the so-called negatives, the bad times. Yes, the great times are good and you will learn stuff along the way. But I think those real, you know, tough lessons come from your worst moments. So, yeah, in terms of Doncaster, in terms of Salford, he's obviously learned a lot. He's then bringing that into this role. I think, as I was speaking about earlier, in terms of League One and now styles of play, he was saying in terms of that strong emphasis on keeping possession, on keeping the ball. Yes, they want to be expansive going forward. And you see that definitely. But, you know, I always find it interesting in terms of when managers come in for, as you say, that salvage job to keep teams up. And the ones that do it the best don't just keep teams up, but sort of probably without the players knowing too much in terms of embed those little bits and bobs that then they can carry forward to next season. And as I say, Hecky's done that at Blades. And you can see that Richie's obviously doing that at the Orient as well.
Of course, snapping at their heels are Stevenage, and they were in action in midweek, as every single club was in the division. They beat Newport. Reports coming out that there was a stirring speech at half-time by Steve Evans to make sure that they maintained their 100% record. Is stirring code word for something else, Courtney, with a half-time addressing from the manager?
Yes, I think he's being very polite in what he was saying for the media, let's put it that way. But he definitely got a reaction, didn't he, in terms of what a strike it was for that winning goal as well. But without a doubt, you know, sometimes unbeknownst to know why it happens, and you know, the managers will get frustrated because they work so hard all week. They think their team's ready, and then they put out a first half performance, and it's, you know, it'll be born out of frustration as well. So yes, a speech like that it's got many different names. I've been on the end of a few. And yeah, you definitely need a reaction in the second half, let's put it that way.
It's certainly possibly the type of rousing speech as we look further down the table that the likes of Rochdale, Hartlepool and Gillingham, Colchester, Crawley could possibly have as well. And my local team, Harrogate Town, currently sat 19th. Right, that's the leagues wrapped up ahead of the weekend's fixtures, Courtney. It's been a pleasure having you on. Let's just touch base with you. Early season for you, Sheffield United women leading the line there. You've started brightly personally. How have you found it so far?
Yeah, a couple of goals on the score sheet. So that's always important for me as a forward. And, you know, more importantly, getting the win for the team against Durham. We didn't start very well against Blackburn in terms of actually it was a good performance, but, you know, didn't come away with the win, which is disappointing. Obviously, with all the fixtures being cancelled for good reason, we've had a week off that we weren't expecting, but we've got Coventry this Sunday at the Lane. So we're really excited to get going again, hopefully get the 3 points and get loads of fans back at the Lane again.
And coupled with that, of course, this fledgling media career. I say fledgling, that sounds vaguely condescending. You do a lot of media work across a lot of platforms. And having worked with you firsthand, I can vouch for your approach, your company, your prep, all absolutely top draw. And having spoken to many people that have also worked with you, it seems to be across the board. So far, so good. How are you enjoying it and how are you finding it?
It's been absolutely amazing. You know, football is the best job in the world. So I've got the best of both sides as well. I'm still playing. My legs, I'm 31. My legs are still just about going. but yeah, I've got the best of both worlds. And I just genuinely love football, being out at the games. And, you know, for me, that being my job and me getting paid to do that, I definitely have to pinch myself at times. But yeah, as you know, Prutz, I absolutely love it. And being out especially through the EFL, you know, the Championship, there's such exciting leagues to watch, and they've been doing it for a few years now. So the thing that I love as well is you see especially young players coming through the leagues and seeing their progression. And yeah, as you say, fledgling, a couple of years I've been doing it now, and hopefully people will keep me about for a lot longer and I can keep living the dream.
Absolutely. The only one sticking point I'd say is about the distinct lack of sweets being brought to games when I'm in attendance, which I think you're possibly doing me more of a favour, because as the clock ticks beyond 40, working those sweets off becomes very hard indeed.
I'm just anyway, thinking that's about enough of your my health, diet. Mate.
Yes, ever the team play, Courtney. And I love you and respect you for doing that. So thank you very much. All the very best with things both on and off the pitch. Keep up the good work. And to have you here on the official EFL podcast has been an absolute pleasure. We wish you all the best.
Thank you for having me.
So that's about it for this episode. A big thank you to the delightful Courtney Sweetman-Kirk for joining me this week on the official EFL podcast. As always, if you've enjoyed it, then please do give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's David Prutton. Saying thank you very much for having me. The main man, Mark Clement, will be back same time next week for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.